From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Acid is building up in Florida's waters, threatening the organisms living within them. Humans release carbon dioxide by burning fossil fuels, and that CO2 dissolves into the ocean. It's making corals grow more slowly, causing them to build reefs more slowly too. We'll talk about how ocean acidification is affecting the state's waters and what's being done about it. Plus, recent economic indicators point to a healthy and growing economy here in Southwest Florida. We'll explore results of the latest market trends update from Land Solutions, along with recent findings from the Regional Economic Research Institute here at Florida Gulf Coast University. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm Jessica Mazaros. Recent data and analysis of economic indicators point to a healthy and growing economy here in Southwest Florida. We'll explore what the latest data from Florida Gulf Coast University's Regional Economic Research Institute tells us about where we are and where we could be headed. Plus, we'll explore current conditions for stakeholders in the region's commercial and residential real estate and land development. WGCU's John Davis has that conversation later in this hour. But first, ocean acidification has been an acknowledged problem in Florida's waters since the late 1990s. It's caused by cement production and the burning of fossil fuels. Those emit carbon dioxide into the air, and that CO2 builds in the atmosphere. CO2 is a greenhouse gas that causes global warming, and about a third of all that CO2 dissolves into the ocean, causing ocean acidification. It actually changes the chemistry of the water and has negative effects on the organisms living in it. Here to talk about this issue is Chris Langdon, a marine biology and ecology professor at the University of Miami, and he studies ocean acidification. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining us on Gulf Coast Live.
Hi. Good to talk to you.
Also with us is Billy Causey. He's director of the Gulf of Mexico region for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Office of National Marine Sanctuaries. He'll tell us what's being done in the Gulf to combat ocean acidification. Thanks for joining the conversation, Billy.
Thank you very much, Jessica.
And you can join our conversation. Does ocean acidification concern you? Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send an email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org, comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or live tweet at WGCU using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Chris Langdon, you've been studying ocean acidification since the 90s. What are you seeing in Florida waters? What does it look like?
What we're seeing is that there's the CO2 concentrations in the water are getting higher each year, and they actually vary seasonally as well. And some of these seasonal changes are natural, but they allow us to get a handle on what might be happening in the future when the average CO2 concentration reaches the levels that we now only see during the winter months.
And what are you looking for when you go out there and do your research?
Mm-hmm. One of the big concerns about ocean acidification is that studies have shown that it causes corals to grow more slowly. And even more of a concern is that it actually can cause the dead parts of the reef to start to dissolve. And so that this isn't injuring the corals directly, but they're attached to the dead parts of the reef. So if the parts of the reef that they're attached to start to dissolve, then the next storm that passes through will be able to topple them over and damage and kill them.
And so what does the future of coral colonies look like right now in Florida waters?
We're concerned about the future. Right now, the data is showing that the reefs start to dissolve in the fall and dissolve through the winter. And then during the spring and summer months, they look quite healthy. So they can survive like this for a while, but it doesn't bode well for the future, because as CO2 concentrations rise like they're projected to, they'll spend more months of the year potentially dissolving.
So you are actually finding some coral colonies that seem to be adapting to the acid increase?
Yeah. So on the positive side, just like you can find corals that are resistant to bleaching, or what we call thermally tolerant, we can also find corals that are tolerant to high or low pH conditions.
And how are they doing that?
What's that?
How are they doing that compared to other corals?
We don't know how they're doing it physiologically. That's going to be the focus of my research in coming years, is to do experiments and look inside the cells. So far, the research has just been focusing on the whole organisms. But we're realizing that a lot of very interesting stuff is going on physiologically inside the cells. So apparently there's some genotypes out there that have had some sort of mutation that makes them able to cope with these conditions. So that's hopeful for the future, but of course those particular corals would have to be able to pass those on to their offspring yet. So we don't know if these traits are heritable yet or not. So that's another important direction of future research.
And how does the state of our coral reefs in Florida affect the economy?
The state of Florida is hugely exposed to the health of its coral reefs. It's estimated that over $6 billion a year of economic activity is directly related to people coming to either view the coral reefs or to fish on the fish that have some part of their life cycle tied to healthy coral reefs. So it's critical to, and people need to realize that our economy is very at risk to declining health of our coral reefs.
I'm Jessica Mazaros discussing ocean acidification with Chris Langdon, biology professor at UM. We also have Billy Causey of NOAA on the line to speak with us about efforts to alleviate the acid buildup in the Gulf. You can join the conversation. Does the acidification of the ocean concern you? Our phone number is 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or live tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Chris, have you noticed any trends or changes throughout the 20 years you've been observing this?
It's difficult. When you do this research, it's difficult to know what is the... You can see a decline, but it's very difficult to do what we call attribution, because there's so many other things that affect corals negatively, too, that are happening simultaneously.
Like what?
Warming, and then direct effects like sedimentation, any kind of coastal development or harbor deepening releases plumes of sediment that can wash downstream and smother corals. Any kind of buildup of population along the coast results in potentially in nutrient runoff into the waters, which can stimulate the growth of algae, which compete with corals for space on the sea floor. So all that's going on simultaneously. Yeah, it's difficult to tease out, and in fact, it's never one factor.
So ocean acidification changes the chemistry of the actual water. What does that mean for other organisms? Is it just corals being affected?
No, it's almost everything. Not plants so much, but anything that breathes. So anything that any animal life produces CO2 as they metabolize their food, and they need to get rid of that CO2 to the atmosphere or to the water. And for that to happen, there has to be a concentration gradient. The CO2 in their blood needs to be higher than that in the water. And that's normally the case, but with ocean acidification, the CO2 concentrations in the water are getting higher and higher, and the result is it's more and more difficult for organisms to cleanse their bodies of the CO2 they're producing. So in effect, they're becoming short of breath. Just like if you were to hold your breath for a long time, what's happening is the CO2 is building up in your body, and you get this nasty, panicky feeling. And that's exactly what's happening to the animals in the water.
And what are some solutions that researchers are coming up with for I don't know, eradicating the acid? Is that possible?
In a very small scale, you could spread lime over the water, and that will counteract the acidification. But it's not practical on a large scale. There's engineering solutions that do what we call CO2 sequestration, where you would pump air through it and it would chemically remove CO2 from the air. The problem is that the scale of the industry required to do that would have to be as large as the oil and gas and coal industries are today, because the same number of pounds of CO2 that are going into the ocean and into the air would need to be removed. So we don't even know if it's economically feasible, much less technologically possible. So the real solution is to switch to renewable fuels and start producing less CO2.
Because otherwise it's just going to continue increasing as you're seeing every year, right?
Right. And there, one of the solutions is, it's not particularly popular, but it's called a carbon tax, where a tax would be placed on how much CO2 an industry was releasing into the atmosphere. And this would give them a financial incentive to reduce it, their emissions, the power plants. It would give financial incentives to people to buy more fuel-efficient cars. So this sounds radical, but it's been enacted in the state of British Columbia in Canada, and surprisingly by a very conservative government. The people up there became convinced that it made good business sense.
And some researchers actually grow coral reefs and then replant them into the ocean as well, right? Is that a possible solution?
It's a stopgap. It's not a solution, but it's like first aid or triage. It's keeping the corals alive, we hope, long enough until we can do the ultimate cure, which would be to reduce emissions so the oceans don't keep becoming acidic. So it can help, and it can buy time. It's replacing corals that have died for one reason or another, but it's not going to be the ultimate solution.
And let's talk about your upcoming research. Tell us a little bit about that. What are you planning on doing, and how will you do it?
So I'm interested in looking at these heat and pH tolerant corals. So what I intend to do is to go out on some of the reefs in South Florida and collect specimens from as many parent colonies as I can, and then bring them back to the laboratory and then expose them in my aquaria to these conditions of temperature and CO and pH that simulate the conditions that we think we could reach by the end of the century, and then see which ones survive. And I've already done this on a limited scale. And then when I find enough of them that are tolerant, then I would have to work with a geneticist to try to figure out what was genetically different about those particular corals, and then work with a biochemist to understand what they're doing physiologically to achieve that tolerance. And then maybe once we understood that, we could figure out how to do a breeding study or something and then produce corals that had these desirable traits. So this is very much like agronomists now work on drought-tolerant or disease-tolerant species of rice or corn. So the technologies are there. They just haven't been applied to corals yet.
So it sounds like where we stand right now, nothing is really, we don't really have a solution. Everything is kind of just theories, and every year more and more acid is building up into the ocean while we don't really have a standing solution. Is that true?
Yeah, that's unfortunately the case.
And now I'm going to turn the conversation over to Billy Causey, director of the Gulf of Mexico region for NOAA. Billy, what is the Gulf's state right now in terms of acidification?
Well, right now we are experiencing higher levels of CO2 in our oceans. In the past, we were down around 350 parts per million, and today we're in some parts of the world we're starting to see 387 parts per million. And as that creeps up, the impacts, the effects on our coral reef environment and other marine and coastal environments continues to be expressed in different ways. One of the things that I'm really concerned about, and I think a number of us share this, is that climate change is the major driver to all of this. And I think if we look back at climate change and what's happening, it's at the local, regional, global scales, and the solutions are going to be at those same scales. We're going to have to find solutions at the global scale, regional scale, and local scales. We can all make a difference. But right now it's convincing people that there is a problem. Sometimes, periodically, when the waters get too warm, like they are this year, our coral reefs start turning white. And in 1987 and 1990, 97, 98, the coral reefs in the Florida Keys turned absolutely stark white. You could see the reefs from a mile away because of the coral bleaching that had taken place. That's when they lose a symbiotic algae that lives in the tissue of the corals that gives them their color. This alarming sight is something that you would think would impress people and that it would alert their attention to climate change problems. That's not happening. And so as we experience more and more increased ocean acidification, I'm concerned that we're not going to have that visual effect, and that it's going to be harder to convince people that there is a problem in the ocean until it's too late. In other words, when the calcium carbonate skeletons of shells start crumbling, or when the coral reefs can no longer grow because the corals can't secrete the calcium carbonate skeletons. So all of these have repercussions. So our greatest challenge right now around the Gulf Coast states, is around the wider Caribbean, is to increase the public's awareness that there is a problem, to get them on board, that even at the local level they can make a difference, reducing our CO2 impacts, the amount of CO2 we put in the atmosphere, both as individuals, as cities, as communities, as states. These are all important things that we need to be working towards. Each and every person can make a difference. But it also gets to the larger global scale. And when we're working with coral reefs, like here in the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary, our efforts are aimed at trying to protect the reefs to the fullest extent possible while they sustain impacts at the global regional scale. And that doesn't mean we're all at fault, but it does mean that we're all part of the solution. And I think it's important that we start working that way.
And how is NOAA monitoring the Gulf for acid buildup right now, just for those who may not know?
We have actually there are several different stations, and Chris, who did a very fine job of explaining what's going on, is aware that we have a couple of monitoring buoys offshore. We have one here in the Florida Keys where they are monitoring routinely the amount of CO2 that is in the atmosphere and in the water. And we also have one of those off of Gray's Reef National Marine Sanctuary, which is off the coast of Savannah. It's about 40 miles southeast of the mouth of the Savannah River. And by understanding the levels and by measuring those and keeping track, it gives us a good handle on what is actually entering our waters. And I do know that there have been some changes detected. I think this is going to be important for us over the long term to have a very integrated network of monitoring stations.
What changes are you referring to?
Excuse me?
You mentioned that some changes were detected. What do you mean by that?
Well, I just know from the scientists that I've heard that there have been some increased levels. Chris actually would probably be more familiar with that than myself, but the station down in the Keys is showing some levels of increase as opposed to when they first put it in.
And so how long has this been on NOAA's radar?
Oh, gosh, ocean acidification has been on NOAA's radar I would say, being in NOAA, I was alerted to it in the first year that I started paying a lot of attention to ocean acidification was 2010. Now, I'm not dating myself, because I have colleagues in NOAA that had been working on it for a career already. It's just that the word was not getting around inside of NOAA. We have one of the ocean acidification experts on the West Coast. His name is Dick Feely, who has been doing research on ocean acidification effects along the West Coast of the U.S. for decades. And Dick's cutting-edge research has really pointed out that there exists in certain parts of the world, and particularly around the coastal waters of the U.S., areas of hot spots where there's higher levels of ocean acidification than others. In other words, the CO2 is not just spread out evenly, but areas where you have a lot of freshwater input coming into the coastal waters with higher levels of organic carbon, that tends to combine very quickly with the ions that create the carbonic ion going into lowering the pH and creating the acidic condition. This is more detrimental in areas where you have a lot of water. Now, you would think that around the coastal waters of Florida that that may be a problem. It could be. I know we were concerned about some of the water flows going into the southwest part of the Florida shelf, where we're currently working at getting the water right back into the Everglades, getting the water quality, quantity, timing, and distribution back into the system. Well, since the ocean acidification is becoming such an issue, I have been watching closely about what has been done in that area in the way of research. And what we don't want to do is see a lot of fresh water put into the system and creating an acidic condition. Well, I think what we're hearing, and not a thing, but some of Chris's research, and he may want to explain this more clearly, but he has demonstrated that there's so much in the way of seagrasses in Florida Bay and the Southwest Gulf Shelf seems to be such a sink for CO2 that we don't currently have that problem because the CO2 is being used up by the plants and by the abundant seagrasses of that area. Now, that's not the case everywhere, but certainly seems to be the case in the Southwest Florida.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, if you have any questions or comments for Billy Causey of NOAA or for Chris Langdon of UM about ocean acidification, give us a call at 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255 or email us at gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Billy, are there any organisms in the Gulf being directly affected by acid buildup that you know of?
I personally do not know of those or anything that's been recorded at this point. I do know that there's a lot of attention being paid to shellfish in some of the shellfish areas,
okay,
and that there's concerns there, but nothing that I can report directly.
And what are some strategies NOAA has to manage acid in the Gulf right now or in general?
Well, I think the big effort will be towards reducing the amount of CO2 getting into the water. It's not that we can dilute it. It's not that we can do anything physically that would change it other than try to eliminate the problems at the local, regional, global scales.
And how would we do that?
As individuals, we need to be paying attention to our carbon footprint. We need to be paying attention to what kind of vehicles we're driving, how much CO2 we're emitting. As individuals, we can make a difference at the local level. Here in the Florida Keys Sanctuary, we have gone to, we have a green building. We have a Silver Leeds building. We've gone to using solar energy as much as we can in our education displays. We're trying to reduce our carbon footprint every way possible. And again, that's going from individuals to organizations to large efforts. So I know sometimes it might seem hopeless to some to say we need to do it individually, but collectively we can make a difference. As individuals, we can make a difference.
You mentioned reaching out to the public and making them more aware, and you mentioned adding some visuals so they can actually see what's going on and materialize this idea. Are there any projects or efforts in that way to kind of put it more into people's faces?
Right now, there's more of an effort in the education and the oceanographic atmospheric research areas, trying to get more information to help us feed into those education and outreach programs. And I think what people are going to see as we are grappling with this, as we're trying to elevate the seriousness of this issue, we will start convincing more. I'm starting to hear ocean acidification used more routinely by our elected officials, and that's a very positive thing. I think it, the more we hear it spoken, the more we understand what's happening, the more we will realize that it's real. A part of my concern, my both personal and professional concerns, is the number of people that still don't believe that there's a problem with climate change. And I think that's something that we simultaneously have to be tackling, and that's convincing the public that there is a problem, that they can be part of the solution, and that we need to start now. And working on new education and outreach exhibits, I know the focus within NOAA, there's been considerably more emphasis put on ocean acidification in the last 10 years than I can recall.
Billy, my last question for you is, what do you expect the Gulf to look like in the next few decades as a result of acidification?
I would say that we would start seeing impacts. It's going to be affecting everything from the food chain, from the plankton that uses calcium carbonate to build their skeletons that serve the very basis of the food chain, all the way up to the very organisms that use calcium in building their skeletons and so on. There are going to be some winners and there are going to be some losers. And I think what we're going to see is a change over time. The change may be so gradual that we don't detect it readily. But what I do know is that in the last hundreds of millions of years, there have been five extinctions on the planet, five different extinctions. At the top of each one of those, and the driving factor for each of those extinctions has been high levels of CO2.
Do you know which animals is it animals or plants?
Coral reefs.
Oh, and coral reefs, I see.
Coral reefs primarily, in coral reef environments. And they actually disappeared for tens of millions of years in some instances. We have higher levels of CO2 in our atmosphere now than any one of those periods of extinction. And what was driving the CO2 levels at that point in time was all the volcanic activity that was taking place throughout the eons on the planet. We don't have that level of volcanic activity right now. What is in the atmosphere is what we have put there. And so that is a very alarming thing. So when we start talking about the Gulf, we have to start thinking about the entire ocean and what's happening on a global scale.
Okay. Would either of you, Chris or Billy, like to say anything else about ocean acidification before we wrap up this segment?
We've been talking about corals, and you asked about effects on other organisms.
Yes.
And we've learned that it affects fish as well. And interestingly, it affects their sensory systems, their ability to smell. So it doesn't affect their growth rate or cause them to die. But in some studies, it affected the ability. Some fish grow up on seagrass beds, and then when they reach juvenile size, they'll swim out in what we call settle on a coral reef.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that by a sense of smell. And if you lower the pH of the water, they lose this ability to home in on coral reefs.
What are some potential like long-term effects with that?
Well, it would affect the abundance of those fish. They would not be able to complete their life cycle. They would essentially be wandering around looking for home. And this is Nemo we're talking about, the little anemone fish that this study was done on.
Hmm.
And then another, it affects their ability to detect their predators, which they also do both visually but also by sense of smell. And it was discovered that some fish become actually attracted to their predators. So instead of avoiding them, mm-hmm. they swim stupidly towards them and get eaten.
Well, Billy, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about on this issue?
I would just like to say that I'm so pleased that you're focusing on this topic, and I was so happy to be involved with the Ocean Conservancy and Moulton Marine Laboratories ocean acidification roundtable last week in Sarasota. I think they're leaders, and they're going to really help us start moving in a direction of increasing public awareness, and that excites me.
Great. Well, that's all the time we have for this segment of Gulf Coast Live. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris and Billy.
Thank you, Jessica.
Chris Langdon is a marine biology professor at the University of Miami, researching ocean acidification in Florida. And Billy Causey is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's director for the Gulf of Mexico region, managing acidification in the Gulf. It's time for a break. When we return, economic indicators from the unemployment rate to taxable sales and demand for goods and building materials point to a healthy and growing local economy. We'll explore what the latest data can tell us about the current status of Southwest Florida's economy and where we could be headed. WGCU's John Davis has that conversation just ahead. I'm Jessica Mazaros. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida. Stay with us.